Okay, we'll begin our public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 1034. And we have the Senate President here call as our first witness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, John Kitzhaber, State Senator, District 23. I appreciate the opportunity to make some comments on the bill which would reorganize the Department of Commerce. The governor, as I'm sure you know, embarked upon the plan to abolish the Commerce Department primarily for two reasons. Firstly, to place the functions performed by the Commerce Department into a logical administrative structure, and secondly, to provide some accountability and control over these functions with the long-term goal of increasing the quality and the efficiency of the work performed. Now, by the governor's own admission, the real priority of this reorganizational effort has been the insurance and finance goal to combine the insurance division and create and to combine that with the financial institutions division, and also as it has panned out, to add the workers' compensation division to that. And these goals have essentially been met in House Bill 3381, which I believe is currently in the Ways and Means Committee. But once you remove those large bodies or divisions from the Department of Commerce, you have to then decide what to do with all the other pieces. It seems to me that the same logic that was applied towards combining those other divisions needs to be applied to the rest of the Department of Commerce, and we think we need to go through the same kind of logical exercise to do a quality job on both pieces of legislation. From these perspectives, it seems to me there are at least two points of concern in my mind. I know there are some other questions that committee members have expressed to me, but I'd like to speak specifically to the issue of the Building Codes Division and to the Fire Marshal. The Building Codes Division has been put in the Department of Economic Development under the governor's proposal, and the Fire Marshal has been moved to the General Services Division. Now, a thorough search of Oregon statutes statutes and state government organization fails to reveal any other logical place to place these entities. And to reach the, I think, a logical conclusion of the initiative the governor started with the other bill, we need to go one additional step, and that additional step would be the creation of a Department of Public Safety. I will offer formal amendments by Thursday of this week that will provide for the following. First, the creation of the Oregon Department of Public Safety. This is a concept that has been used in many other states successfully. It will provide a logical location for safety-related agencies and will provide a sensible structure for professional oversight and supervision of these agencies. I think it is a step that probably needed to be considered, even if we weren't in the situation we find ourselves with this massive reorganization effort. I'd like to point out that there are a number of agencies in state government that are charged with public safety: state police, fire marshal, emergency services division. They're scattered throughout state government. We have the Department of Public Police. We have the emergency service division sort of as an appendage of the executive branch. We have the fire marshal's office division in the Department of Commerce. And there are, I think, an ever-expanding mission for public safety agencies in this state. An example would be the hazardous spill response, which requires the involvement of police, fire marshal, emergency services division. And currently, there is no clear connection between these various agencies that have that common mission of public safety. This would provide an opportunity to accomplish that. Secondly, the creation of this department can be done without creating a net increase in the number of departments. You would be abolishing the Department of State Police and making it a division within the Department of Public Safety. We've checked through our fiscal staff, and this can be done essentially in a neutral manner by efficiencies of scale and combining some of the administrative functions of the various elements of the Department of Public Safety. The proposed amendments would have included in the Department of Public Safety the State Police, which currently stands alone as a department, the Fire Marshal's Division, the Fire Marshal's Division of the Department of Commerce, and the Emergency Service or Emergency Management Division. As I mentioned, the Fire Marshal is proposed to go to General Services in the Governor's Amendments, and the Emergency Management Division is currently in the Executive Branch. The amendments also propose that the Building Codes Division and its subservient boards be placed in the Public Safety Department in 1989. That's a decision, obviously, that the committee needs to make, but let me give you the line of my thinking. There are three building-related divisions in Commerce. There's the Building Codes Division, which is clearly a regulatory, has a regulatory function and is involved with public safety, as are the subservient boards. There are eight of those: electrical, plumbing, boiler rules, etc. And all of those have a regulatory public safety function. Secondly, there's the Real Estate Division, which really is a consumer protection division, dealing with real estate professional licensing. Thirdly is the Housing Division. I believe that the Housing Division could probably stay in the Department of Economic Development. It seems logical. Its purpose is to stimulate housing supply in Oregon, particularly for low-income, handicapped, and elderly Oregonians, and that seems to blend with an economic development function. I think the Real Estate Division falls in a gray zone. Building Codes clearly is, I believe, a division that is involved with public safety. My thinking for not putting it in at this time, but rather having it melded into the Department of Public Safety in 1989, is because there are a number of other boards related to building functions that currently exist. For example, the Builders Board, the Architecture Examiners Board, Landscape Contractors, Geological Examiners. I'm not sure that in this time frame we can make a sound judgment concerning the relationship between those particular boards and the whole area of public safety. The idea being then that during the interim we could take a hard look at what should be carried over along with the Building Codes Division into the Department of Public Safety in the 1989 session. This is a concept which I proposed to the governor several months ago. He is aware of it. I spoke to him of it this morning and outlined my proposed amendments. I view it as a friendly amendment to the proposal outlined in Senate Bill 1034, and believe that the executive branch will see it in the same light. Be happy to answer any questions. I apologize that the amendments are not ready today, but we will have them by Thursday.
It's okay, Mr. President. Any questions, John?
Mr. Chair, Senator. John, rather than create a new department, had you considered putting the emergency service and the fire marshal under the state police?
That was, in fact, Senator Simmons, the initial proposal that was in the governor's bill, and I did consider that. The concern that I have is that they do have discrete functions. The state police has a fairly clear mission. It's in law enforcement and criminal investigation. The fire marshal's office has a much broader range of duties which are not necessarily related to those of the state police, but have some overlap in arson investigation, for example. It's my belief that in order to coordinate public safety activities in the state, you need someone with sort of a big picture person, someone who is not tied into one fairly narrow but important perspective. And I think a director of a Department of Public Safety would be able to pull together the various elements of these different agencies in a coordinated fashion.
I guess my concern is that we're eliminating the Department of Commerce because we think we're going to eliminate some of the top-level jobs, and yet we're creating another one who will of necessity have to be paid more than the superintendent of state police if the superintendent is subordinate to this new director. And I guess my feeling is the money should go to the Indians and not the chiefs, and we may have a plethora of chiefs already, and this is what 1034 is trying to eliminate. So I hope we don't lose sight of that aim.
Well, Senator, I don't, I guess I would have to respectfully disagree. I think, you know, you do raise a point, and I couldn't tell you the differential in salary between a director of a Department of Public Safety and the head of the Oregon State Police. I think there's a broader public policy question involved here. The money going to the Indians instead of the chiefs, I mean, you know, you're going to end up with there is absolutely no logic to putting the fire marshal's office in General Services, which is an administrative support agency. That makes absolutely no sense from a public policy standpoint. It makes far less sense to do that than to put the Building Codes Division in the Department of Economic Development, which is also questionable. And it seems to me that we've embarked upon this process, and now we've got pieces left over, and we're trying to just sort of accrete them together in some way that sticks, instead of trying to take a long-range view. I would be more than happy to try to do a more, obviously, and will with my amendments, a detailed fiscal analysis of the costs involved and the personnel involved. But I suspect that you will find there will be economies of scale by the coordination and consolidation of personnel and administrative activities with the department of the director that can be taken out of what currently is three separate divisions right now. And I think there will be cost savings in there. I obviously will try to make that case to you.
Well, I think that's the aim, and I keep looking back to creating the department or division of financial affairs last session when we ended up with more overhead salaries and no money to pay the auditors. And it just seems to me we're defeating our purpose by getting rid of the director of commerce, but hiring other people in between to do the job that was being done. And if we're not careful, we're going to eliminate the accomplishments of Senate Bill 1034 by. Sure, we get rid of the director of the Department of Commerce, but then we got a whole lot more directors on a lower level, but still nobody to do the work.
One could, Senator, one could make the same argument with the House Bill 3381. We get rid of the Department of Commerce. We created a Department of Financial Institutions and Insurance and Workers' Compensation. I think it's our job to see that that doesn't happen. And I guess all I would ask is that you consider withholding your judgment until. I can make a clear fiscal case with the amendments. I agree with you. I would not support something that would increase the administrative cost at the expense of the services that we are trying to provide. I think that's your goal and my goal are the same.
You've made my case. Thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Frye.
Chairman, you mentioned the real estate division. Was that going to be a part of the?
Not under my proposed amendments, that would not be included in the.
Now, since the Department of State Police was created, which I believe was in the early 30s, or has it always been a?
Well, it's always been an executive branch, obviously, but it's kind of been an independent agency all these years, I do believe, hasn't it? Or do you know?
I'm not sure I can answer that, Senator. It's my understanding that it is, but you should probably check with someone from OSP.
Well,
have you given thought to the, I guess the reason it's kind of been standing alone out there all these years is because it's such a different activity that requires so much professional expertise, I guess, that just any old bureaucrat couldn't run it very well. And have you given some thought to what kind of a person would head this agency
of which the state police would now be a part, and I assume the superintendent would be an underling to somebody else who would be laying down policy and so forth. Given that aspect of it,
I think that's probably the concern that will be raised by the state police. I would probably raise that if I was in that department. Clearly, the concept in the amendments to have the governor appoint the director of the Department of Public Safety and the director appoint the heads of the divisions. You could do that with the approval of the governor or not, but clearly the governor is going to make the appointments to the heads of those divisions through the director. We all know that's how it works. I think that you need, as the chairman or the head of such a department, an individual who is not limited by simply a law enforcement and criminal investigation perspective, nor someone who is limited by the perspective that's found in the fire marshal's office. The head of the Oregon State Police has traditionally, and you might wish to look into this, been an individual that has moved up through the ranks. That is very appropriate, and I think such an individual should continue to head the state police under this scenario. But I do think if we are, in fact, going to bring together those elements that have a common mission of public safety in this state and do it in a logical fashion, that you need an individual that has a broader perspective on the shared responsibilities of these various state agencies that can bring a clear focus and direction and coordination to dealing with the common issues of public safety.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Thank you very much, Jim.
Thank you.
So we have several other people, about a half dozen other people want to testify on 1034, and we are going to just temporarily deviate and confirm this bill and come back to it. Did you get the peg, John? Right now we have Representative Jones here, like to testify on House Bill 2599. As soon as Representative Jones is finished testifying on Senate Bill 2599, we'll move back into the testimony on Senate Bill 1034. 2599.
Living Law 2.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And as I always say, it's a delight to see the Senate members. I don't get to see you folks as often as I'd like. For the record, I am State Representative Peg Jolin. I represent District 44, and I actually reside in London Springs, Oregon, and not Cottage Grove, for the record.
Not in Corporate City.
And Senator Fry is my senator, and I'm proud to have him as such. Because automakers have attempted to put the squeeze on the 1983 Lemon Law, we are going to have to make the law tougher. The original Lemon Law, which passed unanimously through both the Senate and the House, was intended to protect the consumers by establishing public policy to ensure that purchasers of new vehicles were not stuck with a lemon. Unfortunately, the law has not been observed. Recently, an Osberg report, the Lemon Law Breakers, and I'm hoping that if you do not yet, you will have a copy of the report, documents case studies of over 20 Oregon consumers who sought redress for legitimate lemon law claims but were denied their just recovery. Some have joked that the lemon law is a lemon. but I say a public policy decision to protect the consumers has been ignored. The lemon law provides that a consumer has a legal lemon if the new car or truck is out of service for 30 or more days or has the same major defect repaired 4 or more times during the first year or 12,000 miles of ownership. To receive compensation, the consumer must participate in an arbitration established under the Magnuson-Moss regulations which govern compulsory arbitration panels. It is reprehensible that a significant number of Oregonians who own legal lemons have not seen their just recovery. House Bill 2599 will put some teeth into that law, providing manufacturers some, as I call them, economic incentives to comply with the lemon law provisions. House Bill 2599 will grant the Department of Justice the authority to review records from arbitration programs to determine compliance. In addition, if a consumer must go to court, and they can, by the way, under current law, to seek a solution, and the court finds in his or her favor, then he or she will be awarded treble damages, attorney fees, and costs. This bill passed out of my Committee on Consumer and Business Affairs with a unanimous due pass recommendation, and it passed unanimously on the House floor. And I would ask this committee to support the bill. I'd like to add to, if I may, to this simple and brief written testimony. You will be approached by at least one representative representing manufacturers today. Now, I want to have you put something into perspective. This law passed, good policy in my opinion, passed the 1983 legislature. Since then, the manufacturers, and I'm hoping that following testimony will cite some of these specific cases where arbitration proceedings were held, and in fact, no notification to that consumer involved in that potential proceeding was ever notified. In some cases, a gal from the Hillsboro area had a car in the shop 65 times with no resolution. The point I'm trying to make here is the manufacturers have not arbitrated in good faith. Now to the treble damages. It will be implied here today before you by those who represent manufacturers in this state and throughout the country that treble damages will be sought automatically or they will automatically fall into line. That is not true, and I can't emphasize that enough. First, under the provisions of this proposed legislation, if arbitration is carried out in good faith, well intended, that resolves the whole scenario. That is what we are trying to achieve, the intent of the law passed in 1983. If in fact the manufacturers who have had several years now to partake in this process, and I must add that in the committee that I chair, your counterpart, Senator Hill, and members, I asked such a testifier representing the manufacturers, why have you not complied with this law? Well, we need more time. I say, how much time do you need? So in the first instance, good faith arbitration, when that occurs, you can avoid any such implication of treble damages. Secondly, under current law, you can have court as an option. You can go to court, current law. If it comes to the point where arbitration is not carried out in good faith, things fall apart, you're not provided with notice of the actual arbitration procedures, in fact, you can go to court, you can even involve the AG's office under the provisions of this bill in reviewing the case to see whether your concerns are frivolous or with substance. If then you choose to go to court, and only then, if you prevail in court, after all of these other hoops have been jumped through, if you prevail, then the treble damages come into effect. But I must emphasize the point all of this, as I call it, all of this economic incentive, or the heavy hammer, which I'll be the first to admit to, can be avoided only if these manufacturers comply with a law that is and was good policy in 1983. That is the purpose of this bill. The other thing you'll hear today, and you may have already heard within the realm of your office from the manufacturers, is for goodness sakes, you're going to get some people that will go through the arbitration process, and they, the consumer, will not arbitrate in good faith. They will have hired some slimy attorney, if you'll pardon my French, to mess up the process. And then, of course, from there, go into the judicial system in order to achieve their treble damages. I cannot cite the state specifically, and I hope that comes up in further testimony, but there has been a state that utilizes the treble damage provision, or that economic incentive. And I want you to know, for the record, that has not happened. It has not been abused. And all we're saying is we've got a good policy here. Let's make sure it works. Let's take care of the consumer. And the final thing I'll leave you with that I think is just ultimately important. I don't know about any of you or anyone in this audience, but when I buy a car, if I am treated properly and fairly, I am more likely to go and buy the same brand and model again. And I am more likely to go to my friends and tell them, hey, Ford, Chevy, whatever it may be, makes a good product, and they stand by it. This certainly encourages that. This certainly encourages that. And the bottom line there is it's doggone good PR. And for the manufacturers to fight something that they can avoid with the provisions of this bill, well, I would simply say they ought to be ashamed of themselves. And I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Gentleman. Senator Frye?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Now, as I understand it, the law would provide a consumer this informal dispute settlement procedure, assuming the manufacturer has got this thing set up in Oregon. I guess some of them do and some of them don't. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And so the consumer goes through the dispute settlement procedure that we already have established in law, and do you suggest that if the consumer is not granted one of the statutory remedies following that dispute procedure, that there has been bad faith from the part of the manufacturer?
I'm saying that that could be a possibility. If there is a good faith arbitration process set up similar to or like the Magnuson-Moss provisions, and that's been one of the problems. The manufacturers, at least in this state and throughout the country, have not really complied in good faith with those provisions. But in fact, if a remedy is not supplied, and sometimes that remedy could be just as simple as going to that dealership and having your car serviced again, and that would certainly be in good faith. But we're asking for resolution. And that is under current law, Senator Frye.
If the dispute resolution proceeding goes forward in good faith, the way the bill is presently worded, if the consumer is not granted a remedy, then automatically there are treble damages. So the way I read the bill, that's the way I read the bill.
No
provision made if the consumer is denied a remedy. And then goes to court and is given a remedy, even if there's been good faith in the arbitration procedure, the way the bill is written, the consumer would be not just entitled to, but would also be required to be awarded treble damages.
No, I don't read the bill that way. Also, I should say the current law provides that even if the arbitration process occurs and that consumer feels that they have not received proper or thorough or complete remedy, they have the option to go to court. We are talking about arbitration that has not occurred. This, the treble damages provisions.
Well, this is subsection 1 of section 5. It says that if the consumer appeals from a decision of the arbitration panel to a court, and the court grants, and the consumer hasn't been granted a remedy, and the court grants a remedy, and the court shall also award treble damages. So, what you really want, as I understand it, is if there is bad faith in the arbitration process, then the court should award treble damages. Okay,
that's
I understand what you want, but I don't think this quite says that, because I don't think so. But in any event, if it would be a court function then to determine whether there was the bad faith element, that would be a part of the court proceeding. Who determines that issue? Would it be the court?
Well, I would think that would be through the court proceeding. Yeah. Yes.
And then one last question, Mr. Chair, is
Senator.
I just noticed the other day, Representative Joni Lynn, the last 2 or 3 days, the state of Washington passed a revised Lemon Law. I haven't seen it, but there's an article.
In the first biennium, but in future bienniums it will. For example, when I look at the cost in supporting the director's office, I can take probably about half of that cost in one biennium, automate the building codes division. We can do all of our own functions. That is a one-time cost. So our expenses to support the administrative services that's now provided through the director's office would be drastically reduced. I believe that this move is not only good business sense, but as well as political sense, as I would relate back to my working with and the different managers in my section working with economic development in the projects that are already started up in Oregon. I have attached to my testimony some of the functions that we do within the division only for your information. And being as the rest of my testimony is written, I'll try to keep this brief and would be happy to respond to any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Any questions, Mr. Smith? Senator Cohen.
Just how many people do you bring along with the Building Codes Division total?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, we now are just over 100.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Senator Simmons?
Division was created with the passage bill of Senate Bill 73. What year was that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Simmons, in 1973.
73.
Okay. Any further questions? Thank you very much, Smith.
Thank you.
Yes, we have several people. I think they're all, perhaps could all come up together. Steve Nguyen, Bert Gleaves, Bonnie Pound, and Jim Larkentier. If not, you can come up individually. Steve Nguyen first. Whoever would like to come up, if you'd like to come up together, fine. If not,
this is Brian Booth.
And I'm sorry, Mr. Brian Booth. All right.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brian Booth. I'm a lawyer in private practice in Portland, formerly from Roseburg. I'm testifying today in opposition to the portions of Senate Bill 1034 that would eliminate the Corporation Division and divide its functions among the Secretary of State and the Attorney General. In my opinion, Oregon's business and financial community would be best served by keeping the present system of having one person with administrative supervision over securities laws, corporate laws, and the business registry function. And I believe that this position belongs in the new Department of Insurance and Finance. regulation of banks and S&Ls will be in that department, and many of the same issues and many of the same statutes are involved in the regulation of corporations as they are in savings and loans and banks, as you know. For about 25 years, I've specialized in representing Oregon businesses, investment bankers, and securities firms in complex corporate transactions. Representative corporations I have served include Nike, Omark, Tektronix, Schnitzer Steel, Orbanco, Lamb Weston, U.S. Bank Corp., and numerous other major employers and growth-oriented companies all over Oregon. And based on my experience, I'm unaware of any business, public, or governmental purpose that would be served by dividing up the functions of the Corporation Commissioner as this bill proposes. So the securities matters go to the Attorney General, business registration goes to the Secretary of State, and the key area of general corporate supervision is left in limbo. It seems to me that what Mr. Stan Long is proposing in Senate Bill 1034 is like an old fairy tale. Mr. Long is playing the role of Little Red Riding Hood, taking a basket of treats to visit Grandmother Goldschmidt in the Capitol. And on the way to the governor's office, he sees the Secretary of State, he gives her a few goodies, and he goes a little farther, he bumps into the Attorney General and gives him a few morsels, and he eventually gets to the governor's office and he has a few taste treats left for Governor Goldschmidt. Well, that might be great politics, but it's bad news. Maybe good politics, but it's bad news for Oregon's businesses, which need simplicity and not complexity in corporate regulation. I'd like to say a few words about the role of the Corporation Commissioner. Mr. Long, in his testimony, has said, and I quote him, "The Corporation Commissioner is an unnecessary title that suggests functions which do not exist," unquote. This is certainly news to me, my legal colleagues who practice corporate law, and my business clients. About 3 years ago, it was my privilege to serve as chairman of an impromptu banquet which honored Frank Healy when he retired after 29 years as Corporation Commissioner, the longest single term of any executive appointee in Oregon history. It was done low-key, low-budget basis. It wasn't advertised. No tickets were sent out. No arms were twisted, as the procedure which we're also familiar with. But it sold out. And present were corporate regulators from all over the country, officials of the SEC, lawyers and accountants from all over Oregon, brokers, investment bankers, and chief financial officers, and other executives of leading corporations. A virtual who's who of people involved in the organization of new businesses, the capital raising process, and major corporate transactions. Now, these people came to pay their respect, of course, to Frank Healy, to pay tribute to him, but they also came to recognize the importance of the Office of Corporation Commissioner and its significance to business regulation and the capital formation process. Speaker after speaker that night made it clear that under Frank Healy and his predecessors, and there have been some distinguished predecessors, including Judge Charles Carey, one of Oregon's great historians and head of the Historical Society, the founder of the Stoll Reeves Law Firm, the largest law firm in the state. But under Commissioner Healy and his predecessors, Oregon's Corporation Commission and their division have become a national model for providing efficient, one-stop, responsive service to corporations in the securities industry. And today, I think more than ever before, as you pick up the Wall Street Journal or the business section, you can see that corporations and the security industry need a one-stop corporation commissioner. Major corporations are in constant flux with tender offers and leverage buyouts and mergers and acquisitions and corporate restructuring and new types of financing. These are the facts of everyday corporate life, and these transactions all involve questions of corporate law and securities laws and questions of state corporate and securities laws. And in Oregon, and in this environment, the laws need to be constantly analyzed, interpreted, and updated by a respected, well-informed, responsive corporation commissioner. Under Oregon's present system, we have one person who does that, and he's the link to the business and financial community. He's accountable for all these laws, and he coordinates all the corporate and securities records. The first, instead of having one person in charge, Senate Bill 1034 would substitute the Attorney General for some regulatory matters and the Secretary of State for other regulatory matters and leave the basic corporate statute, ORS Chapter 57, in total limbo, administered by no one. And this division of functions, I think, is the first major flaw in Senate Bill 1034. You're inserting complexity and duplication into a system that works very well now. And so far as I know, there's no public outcry, no demand from any source to make these changes. It's like requiring doctors to keep their patients' records at the State Board of Health. Or you like to go to your doctor for an appointment and be told, sorry, this involves your medical history, you'll have to get your records from the Department of Health. We don't keep your records anymore. Just call them up, you can get through, or write to them, and when you get your records, please bring them back and make an appointment. That's the system that Mr. Long would create for corporations in the name of what he calls economic development. In his testimony, he says, and I quote, facts and logic support this proposal. I can only say some facts, some logic. The other fatal flaw, we think, in Senate Bill 1034, is the transfer of the security section to the Attorney General. Now, as you know, the Attorney General supervises all the state's litigation. I have great respect for Dave Frommeyer and his fine staff, but the Attorney General's office is not a regulatory agency. It's the state's law firm. Its lawyers are not recruited to be administrators or regulators. They have no training or experience or, so far as I know, interest in regulation. I can attest from a lot of personal experience that lawyers are not trained in administration and are typically not skilled in administration. An entire industry has grown up devoted to managing law firms because lawyers are so inept at it. I think only a lawyer would recommend with a straight face making a law firm, which is what the Attorney General is, an administrative agency. No business person certainly would suggest that. The only point that Mr. Long stresses in his testimony that I've read to justify this unique proposal is that the Department of Justice will be available to prosecute violators of the state's securities laws. However, this is already the case. The Attorney General does represent the Corporation Division in enforcement actions. Mr. Long's reasoning is an extreme case of the tail wagging the dog. Using his logic, the state police should be put in charge of the Department of Transportation because they already patrol the highways and make arrests. Now, obviously, that's not the main purpose of the Transportation Department. And the main purpose of securities regulation in Oregon and other states is not law enforcement. He misses the whole point. It's not law enforcement. It's assisting businesses and the investment community to structure transactions and raise capital in accordance with Oregon law. This is not a role the Attorney General's office is well suited for, in my opinion, by its training, tradition, or by precedent in other states. Now, the corporate bar and the investment community have unanimously objected to Mr. Long's proposals for the above reasons. He has discounted their opposition and disparagingly refers to his opponents as, quote, volunteers, unquote. But these volunteers, and I'm one of them, speak on behalf of the business community. Businesses rely on their corporate lawyers and investment bankers in this area. Our clients want a simple, responsive system of corporate and securities regulation. Many of them even believe the system we have now is too complex, and they'll be outraged, I believe, if Mr. Long's system is enacted. So let me conclude with a few observations based on my experience in this field for some time. I fear that if Senate Bill 1034 passes in its present form, the results will be unfortunate and predictable. First, compliance with corporate and securities laws would be more complex and costly for Oregon's businesses, especially the small businesses. Businesses will face delays, so they have two offices to deal with instead of one. They'll have to pay additional legal fees because there will not be a corporation commissioner to help guide them through the complexities of corporate and securities law. Well, Mr. Senate Bill 1034 and Mr. Long overlooks is the important role that a corporation commissioner plays in counseling businesses throughout the state. He totally eliminates that role. Secondly, I think you'll see that the mid-size and major Oregon corporations, the ones you know about, read about so much, over a period of time will reincorporate in Delaware. And they'll do that to take advantage of a supportive, coherent, one-stop regulatory system. That's going to be a lot more expensive for them in the way of fees, but I think that'll be the eventual result of this new system. I don't think that's exactly what the Oregon comeback had in mind. Thirdly, Oregon will no longer be a leader in serving the corporate and securities industries. Instead of a model for other states in this area, it'll be a curiosity, out of step with progressive corporate regulation and developments. Now finally, from a historical standpoint, I think it'll be a sad day for Oregon if Senate Bill 1034 passes in its present form. One of the best and most admired governmental agencies, one that's fulfilled its mission openly, fairly, and efficiently, and one that was a model of government and private sector cooperation, which is a goal of the Goldschmidt administration, will just disappear. It'll disappear not because of any pressure from the public or the businesses it served, but because of the views of one well-meaning but misinformed person. One person will have brought down the great heritage of Frank Healy and the other public servants who have successfully served Oregon for decades. Now, I supported candidate Neil Goldschmidt for governor, and I support Governor Goldschmidt and his Oregon comeback. But I think breaking up the corporation division and eliminating the role of corporation commissioners I've described does not seem to me to have anything to do with the Oregon comeback. It's an Oregon throwback. It's a throwback to duplication, additional expense, inefficiency, and confusion for Oregon's business and investment community. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Booth. Any questions, Mr. Booth? Thank you very much. Steve Wynn.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, we're taking things out of order a little bit. For the record, my name is Kurt Glaves.
It's okay.
And
Mr. Steve Wynn.
Yes.
I am presenting the testimony on behalf of both the Securities Regulation Section and Business Law Section of the Oregon State Bar. I'm an attorney with the law firm Schwabe, Williamson & Wyatt in Portland, Oregon. I'm a member of the Executive Committee of the Securities Regulation Section of the Oregon State Bar, and I chair its Legislative Subcommittee. The Business Law and Securities Regulation Sections of the Oregon State Bar are opposed to those portions of Senate Bill 1034 which would dismantle the Corporation Division and separate and reassign the Business Registry and Security Sections of the Corporation Division. Under Senate Bill 1034, the Business Registry Section would be transferred to the Secretary of State's office, and the Security Section would be transferred to the Attorney General's office. We believe that separating these two functions and reassigning them as proposed by the bill would be detrimental to the interests of the public and would destroy a part of government that is functioning remarkably well. We believe that this aspect of the proposal would have a very negative impact on business formation and financings in the state. The Corporation Division has historically operated extremely well. There is widespread satisfaction with the current system, not only among lawyers in the state whose practices involve the Corporation Division, but also with individual businessmen. This group, the support among the legal community extends not just in the Portland metropolitan area, but includes plaintiffs' lawyers as well as business lawyers representing emerging companies and lawyers from around the state. The Corporation Division operates in a professional manner, is efficient, and responds to a rapidly changing regulatory environment. The two corporation commissioners in office during the last 20 years have successfully established a one-stop office for Oregon business that deals with a wide range of issues critical to business formation. A substantial portion of the users of the Corporation Division are individuals who are establishing businesses without the assistance of lawyers. The Corporation Division is geared to servicing those users as well as lawyers handling such matters. The success of the Corporation Division is attributable in part to the open relationship among the Corporation Commissioner, the staff of the Corporation Division, interested lawyers, brokers and dealers who are regulated by the Corporation Division, and others interested in matters within the jurisdiction of the division. Historically, no significant policy, rule, or statutory change has been proposed or implemented without first seeking and considering the views and judgment of representatives of these constituencies. For example, the corporations, partnership, securities, and soon business name statutes have all been significantly revised during the last two legislative sessions. These revisions involved a cooperative effort among the corporation commissioner, the staff, lawyers, and the other interested parties. A wide diversity of views were presented, compromises were made, and very workable, balanced statutes emerged. To our knowledge, the reorganization of the Corporation Division was proposed without soliciting the views of representatives of any of these constituencies and is not supported by any of these constituencies. The supervision of the Corporation Commissioner over the business registry and security sections has led to a coordinated policymaking in the areas of business formation and financing. We believe that small businesses in particular have benefited from having these sections integrated and administered in a consistent manner. The Corporation Division is designed and currently functions to facilitate compliance with the law. The Corporation Division staff routinely assist business people and lawyers in ensuring that their businesses and transactions will be in accordance with Oregon law. The division also regulates securities brokers and dealers with the goal of facilitating compliance so that enforcement actions are usually unnecessary. To our knowledge, the Attorney General's office, on the other hand, does not handle any regulatory functions, and we believe the assignment of the securities registration functions to the Attorney General's office is inappropriate. The litigation process is adversarial in nature. While we agree on the need of a strong advocate when enforcement action results in litigation, it is a spirit of cooperation and facilitating compliance with the law that we want to foster when dealing with an area of regulations that so directly affects economic development. We are not opposed to the reorganization of the Commerce Department, and we realize that the reorganization of the Commerce Department requires that a new home be found for the Corporation Division. However, we believe that a more logical and efficient approach would be to keep the Corporation Division intact as a single entity and to reassign it to the Secretary of State's office or, as Mr. Booth has suggested, to the to-be-created Department of Insurance and Finance if this committee believes that there is a possible home for it there. Business formation and capital raising, the two subjects over which the Corporation Division has responsibility, are integral parts of the economic development in this state. We believe that this alternative proposal has the following advantages. It would preserve a well-functioning integrated agency. It would enhance the concept of one-stop licensing. That is a key point, if I might add, to the comeback plan proposed by Governor Goldschmidt. It would also aid entrepreneurs in establishing new businesses in this state. It would signal to the public that business formation and capital raising are critical elements to the economic strength and vitality of this state. The alternative proposal would also keep the securities regulation function in an agency that is designed principally to facilitate compliance with the law and processing filings rather than an agency whose predominant focus is on bringing lawsuits to enforce the law. Due to the haste with which the reorganization plan has been developed and the absence of our involvement at the process at an early stage, our testimony today has been a brief summary of our concerns. Our purpose has been to raise these concerns with you to make our members available to assist you in your further evaluation of the reorganization proposal. We would be happy to provide you with a more detailed explanation of our views at a later time and to respond to any specific questions that you might have.
Any questions? If I might supplement Mr. Lee's remarks, I'm Steve Wynn. I'm the chair of the Oregon State Bar Section on Securities Regulation, and I'm also a partner in a Portland law firm. We have given a great deal of thought over the last couple of years to how, in Oregon, we go about creating a climate that's favorable for capital formation to Oregon businesses, while at the same time maintaining capital market an integrity level in the capital marketplace such that Oregon investors and Oregon consumers can expect quality investment opportunities. I think that that's not been as easy a task as at first it might seem. Over the last several years, we have participated in extensive revisions, as Kurt mentioned, of the securities law, the limited partnership law, corporation code, the Assumed Business Name Act, and other related statutory provisions that impact the capital formation process. We have attempted to build into those statutes the flexibility to deal with the
always increasing array of methods by which new businesses are formed and financed. In the last 5 years in Oregon, we've had a tremendous increase in the volume of venture capital financing, which has brought about a whole range of specialized investment instruments, which our corporate law did not until recently permit. We've amended the corporate law so that those investment instruments can now be created by Oregon corporations. You saw a rise in the level of research and development limited partnerships as a mechanism of funding new technology companies. Those required some revision in both the securities laws and in the limited partnership laws. We've also seen the advent of broad-based employee equity plans, the concept that employees in a business should have the opportunity to own a part of that business. Those plans, we had great difficulty establishing broad-based equity plans under the securities statutes in the state as previously written. That was one of the things that we addressed at some length in rewriting the Securities Act in a broad-based task force 2 years ago in order to accommodate the existence of those plans while at the same time allowing the Corporation Commissioner sufficient flexibility to crack down on any abuses that might exist. This has not been a process without controversy. The members of my own section range from individual lawyers who represent individual plaintiffs in securities fraud and corporate law litigation to those of us who represent principally issuers and businesses in the capital formation process. And discussion of these issues among those groups of people, there's been substantial division on a repeated basis as to several of these changes in the law. We have had the benefit of having a corporation commissioner, a strong corporation commissioner, an individual who is charged with the responsibility of monitoring and assessing both business formation, capital formation in the state. The corporation commissioner has been instrumental in bridging the differences and bringing together people to create a product, a statutory product, that both of those points of view feel very comfortable endorsing. And I think that I think for the controversy that could exist in dealing with the issues we've existed over the last 5 years, our system has created a system where we've been able to work out the differences among the respective constituent groups and create a product that we have brought to the legislature on a repeated basis. And I think you have agreed with us that it suits the needs of Oregon business while at the same time protecting the needs of the investing public. And I think that the proposal that Mr. Long has made by diminishing the stature of the corporation commissioner, in effect abolishing the office, dispersing the functions to different agencies where they will, at least according to the briefing that we've had, be administered at a mid-level, on a mid-level basis, it scatters the responsibility for business and capital formation in this state. And I think given that we're at a critical point in our economy and given that we've made, I think, significant strides in the last couple of years in enhancing the capital formation environment in this state, I think a proposal like that is a mistake. And I think that the problems that it will create, which won't be immediately known, I think you'll see problems evolved over the course of the next 2 years if this proposal is implemented. And I guess the last thing I want to say is a word of caution. I picked up the Wall Street Journal this morning and read that the state of Ohio adopted an anti-takeover statute in November of last year, and it was specifically in response to a proposed takeover of Goodyear. The net effect of that, which was entirely unintended, has been to devalue Ohio-based companies in the public market by 2%, $750 million. Now, that doesn't mean that the bill was necessarily a bad bill, but the point I want to make is that was an unintended effect because the capital market responded in a way people did not seriously consider in passing a bill of that type. I think we have the same problem here. We have a bill that is going to have an effect on the capital market and markets in this state, and I have not seen, either in Mr. Long's report or otherwise, any study of what that impact could be. I see a lot of logical explanation and intuitive reaction about how it's not going to adversely impact it, but I think that we could be passing legislation here which would have an inadvertent effect, and I think it bears more careful study than it's had. Thank you.
Any questions, Mr. Wynn or Mr. Glaves? Thank you very much. Bonnie Pound and Jim Larkin
tour.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bonnie Serkin-Pound. I practice law with the firm of Sussman Shank, Wapnick, Kaplan, and Stiles in Portland. I do not knowingly practice any securities law. As a member of the executive committee of the business law section of the Oregon State Bar, I speak for over 1,200 lawyers who are primarily users of the business registry function of the corporation division. Senator Cohen inquired last week why securities registration and securities enforcement should not be separated. I'm not sure if that question still exists today, but in case it does, I'll answer that. From our section's perspective, the answer to that question is the same as the reason business registry should not be separated from securities. We believe that the single factor that has produced the level of performance you've been hearing about in the corporation division is the cohesive and comprehensive functioning of a single identifiable agency dedicated to business in this state. Such an agency requires the direction of a policymaking commissioner with a perspective on the needs of businesses in Oregon. As for where a corporation division should be housed, there are logical reasons for it being placed in the Secretary of State's office, the new finance and insurance division, or in the Department of Economic Development, and we could support any of these. However, we believe it would be an anomaly to introduce a fee-generating enterprise such as business registry, securities registration, into the Attorney General's office. As the Attorney General told you a couple of weeks ago, that office is essentially a law firm. The practice of law is incompatible with running an endeavor such as registering business entities. As long as the corporation division is kept intact, we see it functioning effectively under the Secretary of State or either of the executive department agencies. We defer to your perspective on the policy considerations that go into assigning the agency to a department.